This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hey, welcome back to the Podcrashed. This week, we're telling the story of Asiana Flight 214. Thanks for listening.
It's nice and cool today.
It is.
It's gonna be... the doggo is barking.
Doggo is barking.
She's mad she can't be in this AC room.
Oh,
but it's
of
not that bad out there. She can relax.
I know. She's just a big black dog.
Yeah, she's just confused.
Aw,
about
her.
Everything.
She's, yeah. Dogs never know what's going on.
No.
Yeah. Like, so today we're doing Asiana Airlines Flight 214. And in the time you and I have been doing this, I have started to write notes for this one two or three times and then given up on it and just been like, bah, I don't know how to do that one.
Okay.
And like done a different one. And so I think I've got something that'll work. But I will say this one is simultaneously very simple in some ways. In some ways it is very simple. Like there's a way to describe this in like one sentence, probably,
sure,
or two, but there's some technical stuff that it's worth mentioning, and there's some stuff we just haven't talked about before. So we'll have to introduce a few little new concepts.
Love it.
We are very recent. So this happened in 2014. Or nope, it didn't. I'm going to say that, guys, over and over. There's two things I'm going to say that are wrong. I'm going to call this flight ANA, the airline, and it is not ANA. It is Asiana.
Okay.
And I'm going to say it happened in 2014. It did not. It happened in 2013.
Okay.
Yeah. So July 6th, 2013, we're flying from Incheon, Korea, so that's the Seoul airport in Korea, to San Francisco. That's about a 10-hour flight.
Yeah.
We're flying in a 777, so beautiful Boeing 777. That's the plane that we used when I worked for JAL. So it's funny. There were 307 souls on board, 291 passengers, 4 pilots, 12 flight attendants. And I saw 307 passengers or souls on board and 291 passengers. And I was like, how do they fit so many people on there? Because our JAL 777 had 247 seats.
Oh, okay.
But it's just because Asiana has a totally different seat layout. So
they've got
a lot more economy. No first class, no premium economy, just a bunch of economy business. Maybe not as fancy as JAL, but.
right,
and so for reference too, so Korean Air is the other major Korean airline besides Asiana, and Korean Air still uses 747s, and you're not going to beat that for lux, so why try,
but just give up.
We've got 4 pilots and 3 of them are captains. This is not the huge. We've got Captain Jongmin Lee. He's the top of the hierarchy here. So there's 3 captains, and the top of that, like the highest one, is Captain Jongmin Lee. He's the check captain, meaning he's actually there to supervise Captain Kangkook Lee, who is becoming a captain and transitioning from the A320, so the an Airbus A320 to the 777. So the Jongmin Lee is supervising. He is technically the pilot in command. He's sitting on the right side in the first officer's seat because he is facilitating or supervising Ken Cook Lee as he becomes a captain on the 777. So he's switching aircraft. It's a similar sized aircraft, but it's a different manufacturer, different stuff. So Captain Ken Cook Lee is a thoroughly experienced pilot. He was, you know, had over 10,000 flight hours. He was on the A320 for ages, and now he's switching to the 777. And he's only got 43 hours on the 777. So he's very fresh to the 777. And maybe it's tough, right? The man, he's having, it's tough to switch planes. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
he's doing his best, but it's tricky. He is about halfway through. It's called initial operating experience. That's what the transition is, like what his training period is called, initial operating experience. And he's about halfway through it, and he's doing his best. Captain Zhang Jiwang, the relief captain, is sitting in business class because there's enough spots, and it's nice, right? He's the relief captain, so he's not flying this portion that we're going to be talking about. And Dongwon Bang is in the jump seat. He's the first officer. So four pilots, two of them are actually in seats where they're controlling the plane. One of them is in business class, and one of them is in the jump seat. So we took off from Incheon and sailed all the way over here. 10 hours. We're like 9.5 hours into this flight. We are well and truly almost to the very end of the flight. Everything has been fine. Everything has been manageable. One of the things with Asiana is they encourage their pilots to use the automation as much as possible. So they, human error, unfortunately, is the biggest cause of accidents. And they encourage their pilots to use the automation as much as possible. Mm-hmm. So they were just sailing over the ocean. And they're coming in to land at San Francisco. They are almost done. They're preparing to land in the cabin. We don't talk that often about like demographics. It comes up sometimes, but I think it's just worth mentioning on this flight that about of the 291 passengers, about fully half of them are Chinese. A quarter are American and a quarter are Korean. So the crew are only going to speak, in all likelihood, they're only required to speak, I should say, Korean and English. So about half the passengers on this plane may or may not have anybody on the crew who's going to be able to communicate with them in their native language. A bunch of those Chinese passengers are actually kids going to a Christian American summer camp. So okay. The plane is full of like camp counselors and escorts and people who are bringing, a bundle of kids for summer camp.
Yeah.
And we're about to land, right? We're about to land. They can see San Francisco. They're flying over the water. In case you don't know, friends, San Francisco is a coastal city, just in case that's not something you were aware of. So they are meant to be landing on runway 28 left. San Francisco was doing some construction at this point on the runway, and the ILS system actually is not working. So there's no ILS. For anyone who doesn't know, ILS, instrument landing system, it's essentially something that allows the pilots to let the plane do the vast majority of the work for landing, and that's not working at all. But it is a clear, beautiful day. There is like, it's not windy, it's not cloudy. It's 11 in the morning when they're coming in towards San Francisco. It's plenty of light. I assume San Francisco only gets like 2 days a year like this. I think the weather is probably terrible there. I don't know that, but it seems terrible to me. And so it's beautiful. And so the air traffic controller is telling them you're going to be cleared for like a visual approach. There's no ILS. The pilots knew there was no ILS long before this. And now, again, Asiana has always encouraged their pilots to rely on autopilot as much as possible. And Ken Cook, brand new captain of a 777, has actually never landed manually, like never done a visual landing with this plane. But he's a professional pilot who's been doing this for a long time. So he's got it. There's a system that I don't think we've ever talked about this before. Maybe we talked about it ages ago. It's the POPI, the PAPI, Precision Approach Path Indicator. So when a plane is landing, there's like a very precise, just baby bear, just right in the middle. You can't be too high, you can't be too low, you can't be too fast, you can't be too slow. Like, you gotta get on a glide slope that brings you from the sky to the ground at the right speed, at the right moment, at the right spot on the runway to actually touch your wings down. And you want to be on a nice gradual slope, because if you descend too fast, that's dangerous. If you descend too slow, you can get too slow and stall, right? So there's something, the Precision Approach Path Indicator, the POPI system, is basically just four lights in a row, like on the left side of the runway.
Mm-hmm.
And four, they either are white or red. So four white lights mean your plane is too high. Three white lights and one red light means you're a little too high. Two and two means you're perfect. You're on the glide slope. One white light, three red lights, you're a little low. Four red lights, you are too low, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the visual help that they have as they're doing this visual landing.
And just a quick question. Is that pretty like standard, those that?
Yes.
Okay, so all over the world.
Yeah. Okay. So if you are ever on like the left side of a plane, when you're landing, especially at night, maybe it's hard to see during the day unless you have good eyesight or glasses, I guess. But at night, you could probably see them.
Okay.
Just as you're landing. So when they were cleared for the visual approach, they were a little high. Not that unusual, right? They were about 14 nautical miles away, maybe 11 miles-ish, and they were at 4,800 feet. So they were a little bit above what they wanted to be. Air traffic control told them that they wanted them to maintain 180 knots until they were 5 miles away from the airport. So this approach that they're making is all over water. Tons of airports around the world have this. LaGuardia has it, where as you're landing, you're over water all the way up until you touch down on the runway, and then the runway meets the rest of the land or whatever, if that makes sense. So this is all happening over the water, and they have to make sure that they maintain that speed until they're 5 miles away. Then they start to slow down and then they can land. The autopilot is set to flight level change mode. And what that means is that the plane is waiting for them to get under 180 knots before it starts to descend, before the autopilot starts to descend. So that's not going to work for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
If the autopilot's going to keep them at the same height, at the same altitude, until they dip below 180 knots, and they can't go below 180 knots until they're 5 miles away from the runway, they are not going to be able to land. That won't work. You can't drop the whole, you can't drop 4,800 feet in if the distance of 5 miles is nothing, right? So they know they're a little high. They got to switch it up. The pilots change the autopilot to vertical speed mode. And what that lets them do is they just type in the rate of descent, or it could also be the typing in the rate of ascent. So for descent, you'll put a negative number, and they type in negative 1,000 feet. And what that means is that it's going to automatically drop the plane down by 1,000 feet per minute. That is actually not fast enough to get them back onto the glide slope. They're not on the glide path right now. They are too high. And just dropping down 1,000 feet per minute is actually not going to get them down fast enough because they're right there. We're like ready to land. We're just a few minutes away. So we're less than 5 minutes away. So that won't do the trick. They drop the gear. The dropping the gear will create some extra drag that'll help them get lower a little bit. They switch to 1,500 feet per minute. And at 2,000 feet above the ground, they were only about 200 feet too high. So when they got to 2,000 feet, they should have been at 1,800 feet. So they're coming down, but they're still a little too high, but they're not way too high. They've still got a couple, like maybe 2 minutes before landing. So for some reason, they switch it back to 1,000 feet per minute, even though they're still too high. Mm. So Ken Cook asked for them to put the flaps to 30. And Jongmin said, we're still too fast for flaps 30. They were going 172 knots at this point. They've actually dropped below that 180 knots. So for whatever reason, they apply the flaps anyway. They're doing all of these like nitty gritty little things right before landing, right? The auto throttle kicked in when they extended the flaps. The auto throttle thinks that the that they were going too fast because they were going too fast for the flaps to be extended. So the autopilot tilted the nose up a little bit. And then the auto throttle thinks, oh, are we doing a go around? And started to rev up. And these are two things that they actually don't want to happen. So at this moment, if you haven't understood anything, I'm so sorry. This is really weird and nitty gritty. I know we don't usually get in like into the details like this, but this is the part you need to hear. Ken Cook, who is flying the plane, who is just becoming a brand new captain of a 777, disconnected the autopilot because it's doing stuff he doesn't want it to, which is fine. He's a professional pilot. He can fly a plane, right? He did not realize that, unlike on the aircraft he was used to, when he disconnected the autopilot, the auto thrust also disconnected.
Mm.
Both engines immediately went to idle. So they are super low and they are very close. They are really, really close to landing and boom, the engines go to idle. Nobody in the cockpit realizes this. Now, normally they should be paying attention to their speed, but they don't notice it initially. So they are right before landing. They are really, really low. They are getting slower and slower. Ken Cook put the nose back down because the autopilot had picked the nose up and they don't want that. They want to go down. So he just brought it back down to level. They're so close and they can see the poppy lights, right? So those four lights, and they've got one red and three white. It says they're still too high. They are very, 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 very close. They drop below 500 feet. The speed is falling very fast. The speed is dropping off very, very, very quickly. And the stories we've talked about where people glide the plane, right, into when there's some kind of catastrophic engine failure, they run out of fuel and they're gliding the plane, the speed drops off really, really fast. And as speed drops off, the plane starts to drop faster and faster, but they do not realize this is happening. And the little lights say you're still a little bit high. So they cross the point where they're, as they're getting closer and closer to the runway, they kind of cross the point where they're exactly on the glide slope. So for 1 second, they get two white, two red lights. They're exactly on the glide slope. They keep going, and all at once, they get stick shaker. They get all of these audio warnings. Geez. They get the plane screaming at them that they're stalling, and then they get four red lights, like almost like within a couple seconds. All of a sudden, because the engines are on idle, they cross the glide slope, everything looks like it's fine, and then they start to stall and the plane starts to fall, and they're only like 100 feet off the ground. At that moment no one realizes that the engines are on idle. Ken Cook believes that the auto throttle should be taking care of this and tilts the nose of the plane back up. Jongmin starts to scream, go around, go around, go around, go around. Ken Cook lifts the nose up higher and they're coming in. The runway is right in front of them. And the runway is, again, lifted up out of the water. And there's a seawall right in front of the runway. He lifts the nose up and the tail of the plane catches the seawall and snaps off. And the rest of the plane slides. And as it slides and then responds to the tail snapping off, the plane cartwheels and lifts up and then slams back down onto its belly. When the tail snapped off, 6 people flew out the back, just got ripped out. Mm. 4 of them were the 4 flight attendants strapped into their jump seats. They were still strapped in. They flew out. Thank God, not into the water. They flew out onto the runway. Jeez. 2 of the people that flew out were 2 16-year-old girls who were not buckled.
Oh, no.
And they fell out onto the runway, not in their seats. The plane slid, it cartwheeled, it slammed onto its belly. When the plane slammed down, that final impact, 2 of the slides, so the inflatable slides that are supposed to go out when you open the doors in an emergency situation, 2 of those slides deployed into the cabin. And when they, I don't know if anyone's ever seen them deploy. It was something that was pounded into my head, especially at Buffalo, where we would open and close doors for some planes. You can never just open the emergency door because it will shoot that inflatable slide out and it can hit, like punch somebody if they're on the runway, and it can hurt them. Yeah. So these inflatable slides inflate into the cabin and hit the way they slide in. They smash into 2 of the flight attendants who are strapped into their seats and smother them. The inflatable plastic just pressed up against them and smothers them. The air traffic controller watched all of this happen because the air traffic controller can see the runway right out their windows and immediately called fire rescue and emergency rescue. The inside, I don't know what it was. It's not understandable to me. The pilots did call and say something like very frantic to air traffic control. I do not know what it was. You can hear the recording if you want to. And air traffic control just responded to them like, we've contacted fire rescue. They're on their way. The right engine catches on fire. The pilots open the door. They get up out of their seats and they open the cockpit door, and they can see, the first thing they can see is that the flight attendants are being smothered by the inflatable slides. And one of the pilots grabs the fire axe and like hacks into the slides to deflate them and like gets the stupid slides off of the flight attendants. And it happened fast enough, like they haven't suffocated. They catch their breath, and as they start to evacuate, they start to open the doors that they can. There are, again, 307 people were on this plane. 6 of them are off the plane before it came to a stop because they fell out the back. There's 301 people on this plane. Well over 100 of them are injured, and some of them are very seriously injured. But everybody on this plane is still alive. What that means is, as they're evacuating, and again, there's a pretty significant language barrier, they are trying to get everybody off the plane. There are so many people who are injured. One of the pilots carried a passenger off the plane. One of the flight attendants, this is a very famous picture in Korea especially, it probably should be famous everywhere, one of the flight attendants carried a passenger off like piggyback style. And I don't know if you've seen like Asiana flight attendants, but they are like waif, like maybe there's a type that they pick, right? And so it's just this like, you know,
tiny,
beautiful tiny woman carrying a passenger off piggyback style. The fire from the right engine started to puncture into the cabin as everybody's trying to get off, and people have broken bones and people have injuries. One of the pilots went and just took the fire extinguisher and was just standing in front of the fire trying to get it out with the fire extinguisher. At the back of the plane, the very back, the last row on the left, there was another girl, a 16-year-old girl, who had been buckled, but her seat, when the tail got ripped off, her seat, her whole chair, hadn't totally disconnected, but it had gotten pulled back so that when the plane came to a stop, she was like strapped into her seat with her back on the floor, if that makes sense. And when in that final impact, the door, the last exit door, all the way in the back of the plane on the left, had caved in and struck her in the head. So she's unconscious and very badly injured. They had to carry her off. The fire crews start to get there, and some of them are like blowing foam onto the engine and the fire, and some of them are coming on. There were five people still trapped on the plane. They're trying to get people off, and they do. They get every single person off the plane. But this particular scenario where you have a plane that is on fire and you have hundreds of survivors,
right,
and over 100 people who are injured, dozens of people who are seriously injured, like dealing with this mass of survivors was not something that this crew that showed up at San Francisco had been specifically trained for. It's like a very weird scenario because there's a lot of people who are alive, but so many people who are seriously injured. So they're trying to process everything. One of the girls who had not been buckled, who had gotten pulled out the back of the plane, this is where some of you, I don't know a time code or anything for you to skip to. I guess I'm just going to say it's very
rough.
Difficult part of this. Yeah. So Lin Jia Wang was one of the girls who got pulled out the back of the plane, who wasn't buckled, and she was killed when that happened. Meng Yuan Li, her body was lying very close to the fuselage. And as all of these fire trucks are coming and all of these different people are trying to coordinate this like very, very quick rescue effort, all of this is happening. And the training that they had received was not to move bodies, because it might be important for the investigation. And sometimes you get conflicting information. That's just a fact. Sometimes you get told conflicting things. So it's chaotic. There's a lot of people there. Nobody actually ever checked to see if she was alive, but she very much appeared to be dead, and they believe she was dead. And one of the fire trucks ran her over.
Oh, gosh.
All of the fire and rescue workers at San Francisco have cameras on them, like body cams. They're actually on their helmets, so they have helmet cams. And the helmet camera for one of those workers was anonymously dropped off at a news station in San Francisco. So it exists. It's out there. Yeah. If you guys are familiar with this story, I'm sure that you've seen it. I'm sure you've watched it. So in that video, they realize what's happened. Somebody like comes screaming out to the driver of the vehicle, and it's just like, you ran over one of the bodies, like you hit a body, which isn't something anybody wants to do. And I guess I'll talk about this more maybe at the end, but I am personally, I think that the way this was handled in the local media was very unfair. I guess I'll just say it like that. So this is horrible. This is there's two phrases that are important to say because they were all over the news. So when in that video, when they were reporting to each other that one of the bodies had been run over, what was heavily reported, and it's mostly in like written articles, so you can't see tone or anything, is one of them said, shit happens.
Jesus.
And they did say that in the most literal sense, they did say that. And if you watch it, they are, the plane is still on fire. And you are a different person than I am. Like, you can have your own read on the situation.
Sure.
And I think that's totally fine. I think different people will, but I read it as they are all objectively horrified that this has happened. And more like if you were trying to, like, let your buddy off the hook, like comfort your friend,
right?
Like, yeah, shit happens.
Fair.
Like, yeah, like there's nothing, there's, but it's horrible if that is someone that you love or someone, right, you care about, or if you put yourself into it. Really just depends whose perspective you're looking at it, because it's not anything you would want to hear said about your loved one. So all of that to say, when the dust settled, we can come back and talk more about that, and we will, but when the dust settled, of the 307 people on that flight, 304 of them lived. The girl in the last seat who was injured when the door crashed in, she died 6 days later in the hospital.
Mm.
The two girls who were not buckled, and I don't say that to be very, very clear. I'm not saying that to blame them. I am not saying that to blame them at all. I'm mentioning it because, really, for two reasons. One, because it's a relevant detail. I have no reason to think that it was because they were, like, just flouting the rules,
right?
They just might have forgotten, might have been sleeping, might have whatever, you know, whatever the case was, they weren't buckled at that moment. And it had this horrific outcome.
Yeah.
And I guess I also say it again, I am not blaming them.
No,
at
of course
all.
Not.
But I do hear people say all the time on like 75% of the flights I've been on, when the flight attendants tell everybody to buckle, somebody says, as if it's really going to matter if we crash, if you're buckled or not.
Right.
Guys, it matters.
It matters.
Like,
yeah,
it matters. It just does. I'm sorry to tell you. It actually, it feels ridiculous, but it matters.
Yeah. I mean, same with the car. Like, it matters.
It matters so much in a car, right? It matters so, so much. And your chances of getting into an accident are so much higher in a car.
Right.
But it just does matter. And you don't know when it's going to matter. And just wear your stupid seatbelt.
Yeah. Just wear
it.
It's
so simple.
Right.
Keep it loose if you want to.
Yeah.
Keep it ridiculously loose. It'll still catch you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, so, in the end, very nearly everyone survived, but not everyone survived.
Yeah.
And the three people who were killed were 16-year-old daughters and sisters and people who were going to Christian summer camp.
Right.
And, and one of those people, I mean, Mengyuan Lee, the question of whether or not she was already dead obviously became extremely important.
Yeah.
And the first autopsy, the first report that came out was from the county coroner, and he said she was still alive.
Oof.
And that obviously is horrific.
Devastating for everybody.
Devastating.
For everybody.
Horrible. Horrible, horrible. And her family obviously sued, of course, because
100%.
It is your only recourse, right?
Yeah.
And the follow-up autopsy showed that she was dead already.
Oh.
And ultimately, so this is kind of an interesting thing. San Francisco actually has a law that you can't have a like secret settlement, like a confidential settlement.
Mm.
So they dropped the suit. And when they dropped the suit, because there's no such thing as a confidential settlement in San Francisco, it's public records or whatever that they didn't just drop the case and like settle out of court, but they actually dropped the case and acknowledged that it does appear like she was already dead. Now, I want to say this, and again, I hate these like really graphic details, so skip ahead like 30 seconds if you don't want to hear this, but her head was crushed. And one of the statements that was made on that video was when one of the person wearing it was reporting that this had happened to his supervisor, she said something along the lines of, like, are you sure that she's dead? Meaning, are you sure that she's dead now that right. she's run over? And he said, it looks like someone, this is very graphic, it looks like someone dropped a pumpkin.
Oh my gosh.
And it is so horrific. And I guess the reason why I bring that up is just because we have, people feel differently about bodies.
Yeah.
Of loved ones. Some people do not care about it. They care less about it. They feel like the person is gone. Their soul has left their body. They are not feeling pain anymore. It's not important anymore. And some people do not feel that way.
Yeah.
Whether they don't feel that way because of like religious or philosophical beliefs or just because of their own. I'll speak for myself. For me, I'll just be honest. When someone I love dies, I actually really, really want to spend time with their body. Mm. I just do. Yeah. I don't like is totally the wrong word. Yeah, I don't know what the right word is.
Comfort,
but that's an important, it's an important part of grieving for me.
Yeah.
And so that to me is what I think about, just like, oh my gosh, like right. their daughter, like they can't even like see her again. Yeah. Right. Like, it's just, I can't imagine how horrible that must be. And so I don't want to, it does seem, as best as anyone can tell, it very much seems like she was already dead. And for her sake, that is good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not neutral. No, but it's not right. like anyone did it on purpose. And ugh.
Right. Well, and in those situations, too, I think the way that first responders speak to each other is obviously much different than, especially I feel like firefighters, is much different than they would speak to the parents or siblings or whatever of the loved one.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Of course.
And I think that, like, that's so hard to visualize. It's so hard to hear. But exactly like you were saying, like, it's, you know, those, like, nobody wins, you know? Nobody wins in this particular situation.
Right. And it is, so the NTSB looked at what their training had been like as part of the investigation, and they looked like broadly across like training programs across the country at that time and could not find any that gave clear directions on what to do if there is a body in close proximity to the fuselage that's on fire that you're trying to put out. So this is just not something they had training on. Now, I've seen people talk about, so again, the way the news, I will say, A, when the first, you only know what you know at the time, right? Nobody's can see into the future. So when the first coroner's report came out that said she was still alive at the time, when that came out, obviously that was reported. Very little reporting when the follow-up
right,
was,
of course, right,
came up, but the people who work in or have training for mass casualty events will say you are supposed to make sure the person is dead, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, and I think that in a chaotic environment, you might think that someone else has checked, mm-hmm. right? If everybody else is running past her, you right. might think that someone else has checked and that you're supposed to put a marker on the person in some way to mark
mm-hmm.
A, where they are, because you don't want things like that to happen, and B, to mark that you've checked her and like you know that that's not a living person who needs medical care immediately. There's
right.
the other thing, and that's the aspect of triage and how triage in mass casualty events
mm-hmm.
has a very, very, very difficult quality of trying to not just figure out who needs the most help, but who has the best chance. And it's very, very hard because this isn't war. It's San Francisco at 11:30 in the morning in 2013, right? Like, it's not wartime. It's a normal day. And it, so it's very, anyway, so training did improve after this. The cause of the accident was unfortunately just pure pilot error, right? Just pure pilot error. And that is horrible. And you know how much I hate that, but it, there's no way around it. There was an element to this that was, like the NTSB highlighted crew fatigue. And I did not find the details of that, but crew fatigue is a huge problem and comes up in all the time, right? They are tired. It's the schedules that they work are often very difficult, and you want people to be at the top of their game, but you're at the end of your flight at this point. And just the fact that there was, so the captain who was flying at the time is training, and the captain who's supervising him had never supervised anybody before, right? And like, it has to be the, it's your first time supervising someone at some point. It always, there just has, somebody has to be first, but they, and it, that's, like I said, I don't know. This is a hard story to figure out how to tell because you, there's like the very simple, they accidentally put the engines on idle. And so they stalled like 80 feet above the ground, and there's no time to recover from that.
Right.
It's not possible. They were 103 knots. They were going, they were incredibly slow when they stalled, and they fell out of the sky, but they were barely off the ground, and there was no way to recover from that. Right. So
it's like missing the last step almost, like
it. Yeah.
You know,
very much. Yeah. And just not being 100%. I don't know. It was, it's, there's like little stuff that I found really like irritating. And I know I have like the benefit of hindsight too, but like in the way, like the local news coverage of this, there was some like hay made out of the fact that the pilots weren't drug and alcohol tested. And that's because in the US, the policy is to drug and alcohol test anybody who has any kind of anything. So if I, working when I was like a gate agent, if I damaged the plane, if I committed the sin of aircraft damage, I would get drug and alcohol tested. But they don't drug and alcohol test foreign crews. So when there's an accident like that, so, or at least at this time, so there's no story there. There's no, nobody thinks they were drunk. Nobody made that claim, right? Nobody insinuated that. So I don't know. I don't know. There's a lot of details, and we could go into more details. There's like when the, a lot of the crews, obviously, how can I say it? So I mean, dozens and dozens and dozens of people needed to be in hospitals across San Francisco, right? And when the first like wave of the crew, flight crew, returned, the flight attendants were really, really, really like seen as heroes in Korea, and which they were, of course, like 100%. And there's a video of like, there was like a million reporters like watching them get like come off the jet bridge into the airport when they arrived back in Incheon, and the like chairman of Asiana was there to greet them, and he's the first person to greet them, which is like very cute, nice, weird, also weird, right? But the thing that's horrible about it is like they got like, they open the door, they like come out, and the first girl off the plane was in a wheelchair, the first flight attendant was in a wheelchair, and she just burst out crying and was like crying uncontrollably. And then all the other flight attendants started crying. Yeah. And there's just so much trauma, yeah. so much suffering.
So much.
And you don't get to see stuff like that as often because, I mean, for better and for worse, I mean, I'm glad that nobody is like following me around with a camera when I'm experiencing trauma. Yeah. But also, we just don't see that part of it where
yeah.
it just horrible.
Right.
Horrible.
Well, and everybody too thinking like, oh, what a miraculous thing. And they're like, no, it was the right. worst day of my life. Like,
right. Right. Mm. Right. Right. Yeah.
Which must be that so surreal is, to walk into something like that.
And then you come home because it, I mean, they can't just, because you're not home.
Right. Right. You're not, like, it's like you're not safe yet.
Right. Right. And, but.
Man.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's a rough one because. Because, I don't know, of all the people,
yeah.
gosh.
Goodness.
Yeah. yeah.
What happened? Do we know what happened to the pilots?
They did not have, like, criminal charges or anything like that.
That's good.
And I don't know if they, I do not know if they started, if they kept flying.
Yeah.
I imagine, I know that the, that the captain, what's his name? Zhangju Wang in business class mm-hmm. of all the other three pilots were fine. He got a broken rib.
Oh no.
In the passenger cabin in business class, he gets a broken rib. But I assume that the pilots who weren't flying probably were fine yeah. if they wanted to keep flying. I don't know.
Right. Right.
I don't know. I know that like Asiana, they retired this flight number. You can't fly on mm-hmm. Asiana 214 anymore. It doesn't exist. And
is that typical?
Yeah.
To retire the flight number?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty. There's. It's actually.
I like that.
Yeah.
I mean, not yeah. like is a relative term, you know what I mean?
Yeah. If everything is like with like incidents, right? They won't, but if there's like there was the time that one of the engines caught on fire of our plane, but when it was coming to us from Korea and the plane had to turn around, they didn't change the flight number for that. But if right. there's like loss of life, they'll usually retire the flight number.
Wow. But, my goodness.
Yeah.
Those poor parents. It's crazy, like, thinking about it, that it was in like 2013. And I mean, even, I mean, all of the recent ones that we've done, I've right. literally never heard of. And that, like, that is starting to get interesting to me, actually. That haven't.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's a, I don't know. Like, especially something like this. Like.
Right.
I don't know why it wouldn't have been on my radar.
It's interesting to me, too, just because the, like, why is it on my news and not your news? That's, like,
right.
I guess algorithms for you, right? So I feel like I never know if any of you out there who I've had the divine pleasure of having a real in-person conversation with
yeah.
has probably heard me say like, well, you might remember this one. And the person will be like, I don't remember any plane crashes
yeah.
or like, I only remember the Buffalo crash.
Right.
And I'm like, but this one was a big one. No,
no,
no.
Right. Why no. is, I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know.
Or maybe yeah. we read about it. We just don't remember, but I feel like, I don't know. It just happens so infrequently.
Right.
Like, I remember the planes like, that went missing.
Right. Like, I mean, everybody
yeah.
remembers.
Like, I don't know.
Malaysian Airlines. Well, Malaysian Airlines had, like, the worst 12-month period of any
yeah.
airline ever.
Yeah.
The plane disappears, and then the plane got shot down
right.
in the last Ukraine-Russia war.
Yep.
But So, yeah, I really feel like the... I really, really, really did not like watching the local news coverage of like when the video was released. Yeah. And I understand, I assume that the person who turned that tape in was almost certainly somebody, one of the firefighters. I don't know that.
Right.
Maybe not.
Right.
But I think they're who would have access to it. Right. So that's my guess. Maybe not, but I think so, yeah. Probably. And
were
I don't
just,
know how much
did they
trauma...
just like tear them apart, or what was like the
and that's I wonder if like the person who anonymously dropped off the tape was like guilty, like dealing with survivor's guilt or like the trauma from that,
yeah.
Or you know, the trauma of that experience. And then the captain of the fire department is a woman, I can't remember her name, but she in the days like in the, you know, news, what is it called? News briefing? News conference?
News hour?
When you have an event where you make a say something and the news comes.
Yeah, briefing, I guess.
Press.
It's coming to us. I don't know. I mean, I know it.
Yes. I can't. I know. Both of us know it. It's right there. But she said on the news that, like, she was in, like the day it happened, the day after it happened, a couple days later, like, she said that she was, like, very proud of, like, the rescue crews. Mm. She was very, like, she felt like things had gone as well as they could. Like, she, like, had a lot of positive things to say about her team. Mm-hmm. And then like when this tape came out, the news was like, do you stand by that, like whatever, and she was just like, yeah. Still proud of them,
right.
And they were just stuff like that, or she didn't. I actually do appreciate the fact that she did not know, and no one knew for a very long time, for what must have been an excruciating, horrific amount of time, whether or not the girl who was run over was alive or dead when she was run over.
Right.
And if... I'm not connected to that situation. What I mean by, I don't mean that in like a cold way.
I just mean
from an outside perspective, I can like let myself believe that she was already gone and that she didn't suffer more because of that. But if I was the person who hit her, if I was her parents or her best friend or anybody, I don't know if I could ever 100% believe that she wasn't alive.
Right.
And that is horrible. And so I say that to say the fire chief not bringing that up when it was unknown and when the details were so incredibly unclear at the beginning. I actually kind of think the opposite of the idea that she owed it to the public to say that they had hit one of the passengers. I don't understand why people feel entitled to know that the day it happens.
I don't know,
but
goodness,
I don't know. But you can watch a lot of it, like 40 minutes of it is uploaded, and it's all on there, and you can see how they're just trying to like function and figure it out.
Just literally do their best
in such a hard situation. I mean, you think about the fact that, you know, more often than not you have some indication that something is wrong and you're like on the scene already waiting for the plane, and this is, you know, it's the big one, it's hopefully the worst event of any of their careers, and they're, I don't know.
And like a lot of the passengers were kids.
A lot of the passengers were kids.
So that like automatically, and the most injured are kids, or like immediately died were kids. Like, like that is a lot to deal with. Coming into it.
And like the language chaos, I don't know how much there was, but I know there was some.
There must have been,
And people, you know, just having to, I couldn't find details. Maybe somebody can send them to me, like really details of the people who were trapped inside the plane, because the fire crews did have to go on board, and some of the flight crew and cabin crew didn't leave the plane and stayed on the plane until all of the passengers were off.
Wow.
And
my word.
Yeah. That is that story. I know. I feel like some of the technical stuff, if I mess anything up, guys, I hope you know, please always message us and tell us. But yeah, it's. I've had like a really hard time figuring out how to structure this one, or what to talk about. Because some stuff just totally leaves out everything about the rescue and the people who died in any specificity. And some things only talk about that. And I get it. I get it.
Well, it seems so, it's like such a, it's such a big one that sometimes it's like we can focus on one and the other, you know?
Right.
One, or I should say one or the other.
Right.
But it, I don't know. It's, oh, that's a tough one.
Press conference.
Press conference. Fucking conference.
It was gonna keep me up all night.
Yeah. Press conference. That's exactly what it is.
Do you, I would rather die than do a press conference.
I would. No.
You probably are gonna have to do a press conference.
Yeah. I mean, I've done quite a bit of press for my last job.
Right.
It's horrifying. And like, you know, all of the like whatever shit about press aside, they got a lot of it wrong. They just got a lot of it wrong.
Right.
I don't know. It's scary. And like everything you say is just construed one way or the other.
Right. Right. Like, I know, like, you and I have talked about this, and I don't know how much detail you want to go into or not. And I obviously, it's fine. Use your best judgment. But that is something that you and I have talked about for years, because you've had the experience of talking to the press and having them get details wrong. And it is in the way that I'm, guys, like, you know, I get details wrong on this show. Sure. And the easiest details to get wrong are when you just don't understand the vocabulary well enough to know you're using it wrong. Yep. And that's what happens
all the time
in the articles where people have interviewed you for them.
Yeah.
People just don't know.
Right. Right. Especially with like fields that are so complex in terms of vocabulary, in terms of processes, like, you know, aviation is very similar. You really have to know the ins and outs to, you know, kind of report on some of these things. And I actually, there's one reporter from the Buffalo News. I'm totally blanking on her name. She's amazing. And she covers a lot of like immigrant and refugee stories. And, you know, she's very much a reporter. But at the end of the day, she really is intentional about getting things right and correct, and takes the time to define the important vocabulary. And so I just, you know, I think we're in a time now where that type of reporting is very difficult to achieve because of how, you know, saturated media is and how quickly things have to be turned in and, you know, so on and so forth. I think a lot of that kind of craft is just changing.
Right.
Because of how much news and like press availability there is. But it was, yeah, it's definitely jarring for sure when like it's you or your situation or like something that you know deeply about.
Right.
When it gets it wrong, you know?
Yeah.
But
I mean, just my like dear in-laws, my like lovely in-laws
yeah.
who like to bike. They like to bike around because that's fun. And they both are like, they are working. They both have jobs and they go for bike rides. And somebody from like the local paper would just did like, not even an interview, just like wanted to take their picture for like a, hey, the weather is nice now, people are biking. And so it's literally just their picture and like two lines underneath the picture on the front page, which is fun. They spelled their name wrong and described them as a retired couple. And they were just showing it to me and they were like, I had no idea we had retired.
Right.
Like,
I'd be pissed.
This is such good news.
Right,
like, thank you for letting me know, like Lockport Register or whatever it
I
is.
I will not be showing up to work on Monday. Thank you.
Right. I'll send this instead.
Yes.
I'd be like, actually, I was recently informed.
Right.
And that's like little thing. And so like little stuff, it you can just see like, oh, and like the last name thing, you know, I'm going to keep my last name to myself as long as I can.
Yeah.
But like, it's,
did they spell it
could
correctly?
Be spelled. No.
Oh, gosh.
No. It could be easier to spell. Let's
it could
be honest,
be.
Right?
It could be. I guess. I don't know. I don't know.
You've been used to it.
Yeah.
But that like, right. Because I don't want to. It's really, really dangerous if you get into that, like, the media is all lies
exactly.
because the media is actually, like, many, 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 many people.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
And they will do a better job or a worse job, a more thorough job or a less thorough job.
Yeah.
Some people will have whatever. Like, they, but those little things where you're just like, oh, this is just wrong.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah. It's frustrating.
Sometimes it matters more than others, you know? Like sometimes it does matter.
Obviously.
But
right. Like in a couple years, good Lord willing, my in-laws will be retired and it'll just come true.
Exactly.
But,
and then that'll be accurate reporting.
Right.
And it'll be great.
But it does kind of matter if like I don't know, just in the case that we're talking about, I just think about
exactly.
I mean, really what it comes down to is like the piece of families and the piece of, frankly, again, people will feel different levels of empathy, but the person, like the rescue crews who are there trying to save people, that's what they're there for.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, I don't know, I just... How would you ever sleep for years?
Oh my God.
For years wondering if she was alive or dead.
Right.
Or maybe you're a person for whom that's less important because you just feel. I mean, nobody wants to like damage a body of someone's loved one.
Exactly.
Nobody wants to do that. Ugh.
And it was confirmed that like they didn't. Like, they did not see the body. They didn't just, like, carelessly run it
over. So, they, earlier in the video, so people saw the body, right? And early on, when fire trucks first arrived, somebody was, like, guiding the fire trucks around the body. But then that person went to go do something else, or people... And the other thing is that fire trucks... So I don't know if fire trucks, or at least these fire trucks at like these rigs that they had at SFO, had extremely poor visibility, like rear visibility.
Yeah. I mean, they're massive too. Like that's the other thing.
Right. And they can't really see, like if you watch, there's a really long, much less edited, like it's like, it is like 40 minutes long continuous of the helmet video, and in that, tons of that is firefighters out on the ground guiding the fire trucks. Mm. And so the person who was riding, who's driving rather, the fire truck earlier in the day did know where her body was and forgot. It wasn't like an intentional thing.
Right, right, right.
And it wasn't, there's also, and this is something again, like, gosh, like her body was so small.
Yeah.
She's like a tiny little 16-year-old girl.
Right.
And she was so small and she was laying on the ground. And I think that, again, just, I don't know. It would be very hard for me personally. It would be very hard for me if someone I love's body was destroyed. That would be very hard.
Yeah.
And I also know that when you are grieving something, you can get stuck on one aspect of it because it is easier to be angry than it is to be sad. Mm-hmm. And I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard.
There's a lot
really
of factors.
Hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. But.
Goodness.
Is your fact about press conferences?
Should be.
Should be.
No, it's actually an aviation fact today.
Oh.
Saw a TikTok about, so my first fact was going to be about this thing. And then I was like, probably every single person who listens to this knows this. Just a fact for me.
It's fine.
But I don't know. Maybe not. Have you heard of Oshkosh? The air venture, like, how do I explain? Like, it's a convention for pilots.
No.
Oh, you haven't? Okay, this is great. This is great then. I guess, okay, so.
Tim knows what it is.
1,000,000,000%.
Our dearly beloved Tim.
1,000,000,000%. Because it's, I'm not going to go into a ton of it because I don't want to, it's like a very sacred thing, it appears, and I don't want to get any of it wrong. But it appears to be convention almost, I guess, for not personal pilots. What the fuck is the term?
Oh, private pilots.
Private pilots. Or, yeah, or like
general aviation.
Yeah, general aviation. That's the one. So it seems like that. And it's like the last week in July every year. So they just finished up. And they have over 10,000 flights in that time period for like 5 days or whatever it is. And it becomes the busiest airport in the world for that length of
time.
Where
is it?
It's in, let me look it up really quick. In Oshkosh, which, where is that? I don't know.
I was going to say, I need more. I need to zoom out. I don't know where Oshkosh.
Wisconsin?
The Oshkosh Air Show.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like people refer to it as Oshkosh.
Oh, yeah. Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Yeah. A TikTok came up, and then they were starting to explain how pilots land. They have like, I don't know, 8 planes landing at one time. At one time.
What?
And they have 2 runways. They take the taxi, what's it called? The taxiway, and they turn that into a runway. And then they use the runway as a runway, obviously. And then they paint different colors on the runway, like circles, giant different colored circles, neon colored circles. Mm-hmm. And they're just like directing pilots to land on the color.
Oh my gosh.
At the same time. So there's like just constantly planes landing this thing. But then that also made me think, okay, but so this is like 10,000 pilots, you know, 10,000 planes or whatever are landing during the week, which comes out to be like, because they're arriving in the middle of the week, there's about 3 to 4 landings per day. Or I'm sorry, 3 to 4,000 landings per day.
Holy cow. How is that possible?
Right. The busiest airport in the world, which is Hartsfield-Jackson in Atlanta, which I did not know.
Maybe-ish. This is a heavily debated topic.
Really?
If you say it's the busiest airport in the world, we'll get emails. By all means, guys, send email us.
I looked it up. I looked up the data.
No,
I looked up multiple. I was like, because I didn't think it was
right.
You're
not wrong. You're not wrong. It's just debated. It's like saying the biggest snake in the world is the biggest snake in the world, the longest snake.
Got you.
Or the
right.
fattest snake
right.
or whatever. So is the busiest airport in the world the one with the most flights, is
right,
the one with
most,
the highest capacity
right.
of passengers, all that,
because
right?
I think London
but
is the
Delta,
highest capacity of passengers is what I saw anyways.
Delta has done a lot to publicize the idea that Atlanta
is literally what I thought it was. I was like, oh, fucking
yes,
Delta, I knew
right.
it.
Yeah, 100%.
But for comparison, so they're doing 3,000 to 4,000 at Oshkosh. They're doing 3,000 to 4,000 landings per day. Atlanta does 1,400.
Yeah, that's impossible. It seems impossible.
Insane.
It seems impossible.
You have to see the pictures. We'll post it when we post this video on the Instagram. You have to see the pictures yeah. of the flight plan.
It
is chaos.
Insane.
It is just like plane on top of plane on top of plane.
Yeah.
It is
yeah.
wild. And
that's
I'm, yeah.
It must be I've never heard of this.
I am
I did not
shocked.
Know it was a
thing. I am shocked you've never heard of this. In like the
it
best
just
way. Like
passed.
this is great.
No, I feel I love the joy
yeah.
of learning about this whole new thing. I mean, it's in Wisconsin and that's like a drivable distance for us.
Yeah.
Tim, did you go this year? Please tell us
yeah.
if you or have you ever gone?
I'm sure.
Or I feel like the it's also like Oshkosh. I'm like looking at this. It's like a little tiny town. It's not that tiny. It's got there's 65,000 people and like 160 in the metro area. So it's like Niagara Falls
right.
size.
Right.
Niagara Falls, New York. Niagara Falls, Ontario is very luxe and fancy.
Yeah.
And who knows how many people live there. But Niagara Falls, New York numbers.
Right.
And maybe Niagara Falls, New York styling, but so 66,000 people and then 300,000 people with 10,000 planes
right.
show up
right.
once a year. That's wild.
It's truly wild. And I was like, no way, no way. And then I saw, you have to look up the flight plan. It is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine? I just can't even imagine.
Like the,
being the air traffic control people, like,
yeah, like seeing what their screens look like or whatever. I don't know what technology they have
yeah.
there. Hopefully good technology, but that must be so chaotic.
Right. And it seems like if you like, I was looking through the website a little bit. It looks like a good time. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah,
it is.
I bet it is
packed. The schedule. There's something every single second of the day. It's crazy.
There's two. It looks like there's two. Oh, I will say the Whitman Regional Airport has 5 stars.
Yeah.
And I've never seen an airport with 5 stars. So I guess everybody loves it.
Yeah. I mean,
that's nice.
To be able to land that many planes, I mean, come
on. Oh,
yeah.
On. They deserve it. They deserve
and
it.
And the friggin' cute little, like, clown circles on the runway.
Yeah. It's got a good long runway.
Yeah.
Now I'm like falling down the rabbit hole with you. This is insane.
And then to land on that skinny little taxiway.
Oof. 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 I mean, I guess
the
if you're
smaller
a little baby
planes,
plane.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Friends, let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Maybe we should go next year.
I would do it.
That'd be fun.
Wisconsin. If you live in Wisconsin. I don't know if anybody listens to us in Wisconsin.
I think so.
If you do, please tell us about it.
Yeah.
And please just tell us all about it.
Yeah.
Because I'm very interested. And if any of you, it's not, I mean, Tim is our dearest buddy
yeah.
from FS Mania on YouTube. Check him out. But I know that no doubt other pilots listen to us. And I imagine other like general aviation pilots listen to us. And if any of you have ever been to this, please tell us.
Yeah, I really want to know. It looks like a great
pick
time.
Pick us up on the way.
Truly.
Get permission to land at JFK.
Please.
To pick us up. No, we can drive out to like one of the little baby airlines, yeah, or airports rather. But yeah, we can meet you there.
Yeah.
And yeah. And we'll find out if we're scared to fly in a little tiny plane.
Yes.
Because I don't know that about myself. I don't either. So we can find out. But it looks great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, on that note.
Yeah.
On that note.
Oshkosh. Yeah. Oshkosh bagosh.
Oshkosh. That's exactly what I thought. Yeah. I was like, the baby right. clothing.
That's what I did too.
Right. Oshkosh. Is it? I wonder if they are related. I wonder if.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's where it came from.
In Oshkosh. It's a good name. It's if a that great was the name. Town, the name of the town that I grew up in, I would use
yeah.
it. I love you so much.
I love
Mariah.
You too.
I love you. We love all of you guys so much. Yep. I don't know, guys. We love you. If you have a story, if you for some reason have gotten this far, and if you have a story that you particularly want to hear in general, of course, we love suggestions. But if you have a story where everyone survives that you're particularly interested in, or just one that you think would make a good episode, maybe you don't like it that much, but you think it'd make a good episode, anything like that. I just need to, maybe you've noticed that it's been sadder around here.
Yeah.
So
a little bit.
And the truth is that you have a 90% chance of surviving a plane crash. Mm-hmm. So we want to represent that fact yeah. in our show about plane crashes. So, all right. I love you.
I love you.
I love you, Mariah.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of The Pod Crashed. We so hope you enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch with us for any reason, you can find us on Instagram and TikTok, or you can email us at thepodcrashed@gmail.com. We do love to hear from you. Yeah, thank you so, so much for listening to this episode. And if you're hearing this and made it all the way to the end, I guess special thank you to you. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.